Today on Talkin' Rock with Meltdown.
Drumming legend Carl Palmer is my guest today on Talkin' Rock with Meltdown. We talk about prog rock and some of the titans in that genre, his live album, CD, DVD that's out right now, as well as the generations of fans that Emerson, Lake, and Palmer has garnered.
You know what I'm doing? I'm seeing people my age, and I'm seeing their sons who are in their late 30s, 40s. So that new generation is latching on to, let's say, the live album that I've got out now, live album and a DVD.
One of my favorite bands from Carl's past is the band Asia. We talk about that debut record and records he doesn't like from that band. Oh, and the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Don't get him started on that.
Well, to tell you the truth, you know, we've been nominated many, many times. I think, you know, I'm quite sure that I wouldn't go there if we got, you know, the award.
This is a great conversation in our debut Talking Rock with Meltdown podcast with Carl Palmer.
This is Talking Rock. Your backstage pass to some of your favorite rock artists. Here's your host, Meltdown.
The debut Talking Rock with Meltdown podcast, a good one for you today, is Carl Palmer from the famed Emerson, Lake, and Palmer is out on tour right now promoting Carl Palmer's ELP Legacy. He's got a CD, DVD release of Live on BMG Music. You can check out all the stuff at carlpalmer.com. We're getting Carl here in just a minute, but first I want to tell you about Al Beck with rock news coming up after we talk with Carl. We've got news on Ozzy, Papa Roach, Disturbed as well, and more. In the meantime, got a chance to talk with Carl Palmer. Like I said, this tour goes through the beginning of November.
That's correct, yeah. About 24 concerts in all.
Yeah, Emerson, Lake, and Palmer lives on. You know, my first question is, I guess, kind of an obvious one. It's like, how important is it for you to keep the legacy of ELP alive?
Well, I think it's really good to keep the music alive, mainly because it was the start of a new form of music called prog rock, which basically was invented in England. So this is an art form which will be with us forever. Being one of the first people to be involved with it, one of the first groups, Emerson, Lake and Palmer, I kind of feel it's a bit of a duty of mine just to keep this thing sort of going and show the versatility of the music. Because, I mean, ELP music has been played by orchestras, jazz groups, been played by rock bands, and I'm now playing it just with guitars, no keyboards. So I'm just showing how in-depth the music is, how versatile it is. I'm trying to bring it to a new generation. That's the story. I mean, you gave America gave the world jazz, right? Mm. And England gave the world prog rock. And I feel that, you know, whilst I'm here, I should do everything I can to introduce new generations to this music.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's funny because there are still some prog rock bands. I mean, I just saw Sons of Apollo this year and stuff like that. Are there some prog rock bands out there right now that interest you?
I don't really consider Sons of Apollo sort of prog rock, really. They're not. Difference of opinion makes horse racing possible. But I did see them at the beginning of the year. I did the prog rock cruise, and they were on there. I wouldn't call them too proggy to be honest with you. But hey, what's the definition of prog? A 20-minute introduction, intro? I don't know. You know, everyone's got their own way of thinking about it.
Yeah, I just did a thing today on my Twitter, my Facebook. Kind of ironic. I'm talking to you. I'm doing the Mount Rushmore of musicians this week. Yesterday was bass players, and today is Mount Rushmore of drummers. And people have to pick their, you know, top four drummers or whatever. And of course, your name keeps coming up along with Neil Peart. And it's kind of funny because you can see, like, I don't even have to know the person to know what kind of music they listen to just by who they put in their four drummers. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, so if it's some sort of heavy stuff, it's, you know, obviously, and then it got guys there in the prog rock like Danny Carey and, you know, and stuff like that. So would you consider Tool a prog rock band?
Absolutely. Absolutely, 100%. That is, you know, for me, that is. That's for sure. That is. I mean, I'm quite a Tool fan. I've only really got one album of theirs, in actual fact. It's the Black Album, whatever that was called. I haven't played it for years. But, yeah. No, I also did quite a few drum clinics with Danny Carey, a good few years ago now. A very nice guy, great sounding band.
Yeah, that's a great band. You know, you've probably put out more stuff than the guys from Tool have in the last 12 years.
I can't comment on that.
Well, it's kind of a joke because they just keep on pushing their record back and back and back. But you talk about a new generation. Are you seeing younger kids and stuff come out to see you guys play?
Yeah, what I'm doing, I'm seeing people my age and I'm seeing their sons who are in their late 30s, 40s. So that new generation is latching on to, let's say, the live album that I've got out now, live album and a DVD. The CD has got different tracks to the DVD. The DVD is a tribute to Keith and Greg, who died, as you know, way back in 2016. It was recorded in Florida. It's got people like Steve Hackett guesting on there from Genesis. He's playing harmonica and guitar. I've got the Ida Choir singing on a great piece called Jerusalem, which is a classic piece that ELP recorded. Mark Stein on piano, keyboards, Hammond, singing Welcome Back, and the classic Knife Edge piece by Emerson, Lake & Palmer. So that's what I'm out there promoting at the moment. That's what we're playing. And, you know, it's on BMG, the same label as the ELP's catalogue.
Yeah, you guys got this box set coming out, the relaunch, the catalog, the whole thing. You know, back in the 70s when you guys really broke, would you consider that the peak of, you know, prog rock?
You know, prog rock has always been here. You know, when you say peak, you mean popularity.
Yeah.
I would say it was more popular in the 70s, that's for sure. But, you know, all music has its day. Some stays behind and some doesn't. I mean, you can still go out and hear jazz now. Look how long that's been going. I'm sure that will happen with prog. Yes, it will diminish. Yes, it doesn't get played in drive time on the radio. It's not as popular, but it's still an art form. And, you know, because it came from England, you know, I'm very proud of that, to be at the beginning of that art form, and that's why I feel that I just need to keep it going, because there's a lot of bands who are doing just that, and it's important to me, you know, personally.
Yeah, I recently got back into vinyl in the last couple of years, and it's like prog rock for me. I was never like a huge fan. Of course, I always liked it, appreciated it, whatever, but I seem to be putting these records back on. You know, ELP, yes. I'll tell you, one of my favorite records I've bought was the Asia album. I mean, that's like one of my favorite albums. I listen to it all the time.
Great. You must be talking about the first one.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know,
we made quite a few albums after that, which weren't very good. The first three were great. The last five, I really didn't enjoy myself.
Yeah. Well, the reason I bring up that Asia record, because that was 1982, if I'm not mistaken. I just discovered rock and roll, and that song, the songs from that record were all over the radio. When you put that record on, it's almost like a greatest hits of sorts.
Yeah. Sometimes you strike lucky. What can I tell you?
Yeah. It's funny you talk about the other records that you didn't like very much, because I think Kevin Martin from Candlebox told me, he goes, there's just records that every band puts out that they just hate.
Yeah, there's always a record. I mean, I have one with ELP. It's Love Beach. I've never been a big it's never been a big favorite of mine, Love Beach. I mean, the band had actually broken up in 78 when we recorded that. I mean, there's one good track on there, which I actually play on stage. It's not written by ELP. It's a classical cover, and it's written by Rodrigo, and that's called Canario. And I'll be playing that on this tour. So, you know, it wasn't all bad, but it wasn't my favorite album, that's for sure.
Yeah. Now, you go all the way back to, you know, back in the 60s and stuff with Arthur Brown and that. And is it true you played on that song Fire? I didn't know that.
Right, on that album, there's two drummers. I'm not even listed on the album. There's a John Marshall, there's a Dracian Thieker, the original drummer, and John Heisman, who's just died. When the album was number one with a single, I was the drummer that was in the band. I had recorded with Arthur prior to that, and on the boxes, it was never marked who played what on any of the tracks. It was done by Kit Lambert. He committed suicide. He jumped out of a window. Mm. That was the guy who was producing it. So I cannot tell you that. I don't get a credit on the album. Let me just say that I get a credit on the financial side, because I actually was in the band touring with them for about 18 months on and off. And Arthur's going to be coming back out with me, actually, guesting with my band, I hope, in the very near future.
Wow, that's great. Yeah, that's unbelievable. I saw that in your bio, and I'm like, man, I couldn't believe that. That was a while back. I wanted to ask you about the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. The nominations came out today, and of course, of course, you know, you got your usual rock bands like Radiohead and Rage Against the Machine and stuff like that. Then you know, they always go off the deep end with the Janet Jacksons and different things like that. What are your thoughts about the Rock Hall?
Well, to tell you the truth, you know, we've been nominated many, many times. I think, you know, if I don't know if I, well, I'm quite sure that I wouldn't go there if we got, you know, the award. I don't think I would place that much importance on it. I mean, we've been going for so long, ELP went for so long and never got noticed. I think I'm in the Hall of Fame. I've had a great career in America anyway. The Hall of Fame to me is the American public, not four guys sitting behind a desk saying Joan Jett should be in the Hall of Fame. That doesn't really cut it with me. Nothing against Joan Jett. The Hall of Fame is the fact that the American public have given me a career and a lifetime in music. That's what counts. As I say, not four or five guys, you know, flipping a coin or sitting around a desk deciding who's to go in. You know, I don't really see that myself. So for me, it's too late now. Plus the fact Greg and Keith aren't alive. So I probably wouldn't collect it if it was given to me.
Yeah, do you think that earlier on in the Rock Hall's existence, if they would have chosen you guys, you would have gone on with, and maybe had a different attitude towards it?
Possibly, if it was a long time ago, you know.
Yeah.
You know, it would be, I'm talking about 10 years back, 15 years back. Yeah, we would have definitely looked at that. It wasn't something that we aspired to get. We just couldn't work out how a lot of people were getting in there. We thought, well, surely, you know, we started way before that, had all this great success. California Jam, 220,000 people. You know, oh, how come, you know? So we decided just to push it to the back and say, well, they've obviously got their own agenda and how they do it. Let's just carry on and do what we do. And, you know, listen, a lot of people tell you the minute you're in the Hall of Fame, you can put your fee up and you get more money. I'm not too sure that actually means anything at all. I mean, to be honest with you, the way the different acts are picked, I'm very happy for anyone who's in there. It's not something that keeps me awake at night wanting to be in the Hall of Fame in America. I'll be very honest with you. If the public didn't come and see me play, then I'd be upset.
Yeah, it's kind of funny how the Rock Hall seems to just overlook the prog rock genre.
Well, no, Yes are in there. Yes were inducted last year.
But it took them a long time.
Yeah, and it took them a long time. And don't forget, the first five dates that Yes ever played in America, they played with ELP, which is interesting, because they asked us if they could come over with us. We'd already done two tours here. So that's interesting. But as I say, there's no real understanding on how they pick and why they pick and the timing of when they pick. It's very difficult to even understand the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Yeah. ELP and Yes touring in the 70s, man. That must have been something. So what year was that you're talking about when you brought them over for the first time?
I think probably 72, late 71, early 2, somewhere around there.
Yeah. Did you see something in those guys that you saw in yourself?
No, basically they were a five-piece band and they had a lot more singing going on than what we did. We played classical adaptations and were more instrumental. One vocalist, three people against five. There was no comparison at all. But we knew everyone. England's a small place and you get to meet all of the musicians that are in the same genre as yourself most of the time because there's only so many places you can all play. So we knew Yes and they asked, you know, we'd like to go over. Could we come over with you? And we said, yeah. So we spoke to the management and we offered them five dates with us. You know, there was no competition thing there. It was none of that, like a lot of journalists tended to think at the time. We just said, yeah, if we can help you, why not? Come over. We're having a great time over there.
Yeah. You just mentioned the California Jam. That was in 1974. Is that right?
Somewhere around there, yeah.
Yeah, that's amazing. So you guys went on. You guys theoretically headlined the whole set, but you guys had to wait a little while, if I'm not mistaken. Didn't Deep Purple, they wanted to wait till the sun went down or something?
There was a lot of that going on. I think there was a problem, not really the sun going down, who should go on first. It was a double headliner anyway, so I didn't really sort of care if they went on first or they went on last, you know. And I forget which way it was, but I know that Richie Blackmore got rather mad and smashed his guitar into the camera and things, which I think cost him about $10,000 that night. But hey, if that's what you want to do, that's rock and roll, you know.
That is. Yeah, you know, speaking of Deep Purple, I just saw Glenn Hughes a couple weeks ago. And I think you guys are about the same age, but I got to tell you, man, he's keeping himself in good shape. He's sober. He's doing the right things, and he is great on stage.
Yeah, he's fantastic. I've heard him singing recently, and we've got a mutual friend of ours, Tony Iommi, and from Black Sabbath, and we were just talking the other day, Tony and myself, how it's great to see that, you know, he's come way back. He's completed the circle. He's at the top of his game now, and he's doing really well. He's playing with Joe Bonamassa. It's all happening for him.
Yeah, he's playing at the Tokyo, where you're going to be playing on October 28th, and I was very impressed that guy could still play like that, still sing. sing like that, perform. He looks like he's having a blast up there as well. How's Tony doing, by the way?
He's doing very, very well. I had lunch with him about 2 weeks ago. He lives out in the country where I've got a house also. And we meet up, you know, 2 or 3 times throughout the year and have a chat, you know. And we've got some mutual friends out there, and they were with us. I posted something on Facebook. You can see there's a picture of me with them in the kitchen in one of the houses. So you can check that out. He's a great guy. I love him madly.
Now, you guys both grew up in Birmingham, right? Did you guys know each other growing up?
Yeah, basically we're from the same town. We're from Birmingham, but we're from the same area. He's from Handsworth, an area called Handsworth, and I'm from an area called Handsworth Wood. The difference being about 4 or 5 trees we've got extra. Apart from that, there's no difference. So we're just up the road from each other. No, I never met Tony in Birmingham because Tony was still playing in like a garage, I would imagine, or not doing many gigs. I'd already left when I was 15. Black Sabbath really weren't even on their way then. That was in 65. I left Birmingham, travelled down to London, and I started working professionally with a local sort of London soul singer that had a number one single called Out of Time, written by Mick Jagger, Keith Richards, and that was in 66.
Mm-hmm. Now, I've never been to Birmingham, but I from what I've read and what I've, you know, with Sabbath and Judas Priest and that kind of thing, it kind of mirrors a little bit of Detroit, kind of working class, you know, kind of, you know, all that kind of stuff, and a lot of great music.
It's exactly like that. A lot of places to play. They make Jaguar cars there. They make Land Rover there. A lot of blue collar. A lot of places to play. A lot of talent. ELO, Stevie Winwood, The Move, you know, all of these guys. You know, it's just full of talent, mainly because there's places to play. And that really adds to the equation. It's a great town. It's like the second biggest town in England. There's probably better musicians there than still in Birmingham than anywhere else in England, to tell you the truth. It just seems to be a hub. And there's a lot of different nationalities there now. So there's a lot of crossover music, a lot of world music. It's really rich in heritage, that's for sure.
Now, that being said, did Detroit ever play a role on you growing up, like with Motown or anything like that?
I played with an English soul singer, as I mentioned to you earlier, that had a number one single win by Keith Richards and Mick Jagger. So he played a lot of soul Tamla in his set anyway. His name was Chris Farlow. So, yeah, I was involved with that on a professional level. Wasn't the music I listened to personally at home, but I was involved in it, and I enjoyed a lot of the melodies.
Hmm. How many more years do you think you got in this tour game? What do you think? You feeling good? You feel like you can keep going?
How long's a piece of string?
Exactly. Yeah. Well, that's good, man. So
listen, you know, when you do something like you listen, an old man many, many years ago said to me, Carl, he said, and he was a musician, professional musician. He said, Carl, when you can find something in life that you'll do for your profession, and you also make a hobby out of it, and you'll also do it when you don't need to do it, he said, then you'll be doing something that will last forever. And what he was saying is, if you can actually work at something that for you isn't work, and this has never been work to me, then you'll just be there forever. You'll do it as long as you want to do it. As long as my health holds out, you know, if I don't want to play, I'll just work less, but I'll never stop playing.
Yeah. What has been the key to your success over the years to become one of the best drummers on the planet?
Just perseverance.
Yeah. Yeah.
A small amount of talent and a lot of hard work.
Are you one of these guys that just, like, you know, wakes up in the morning and, you know, just goes and just twiddles around on the drums, or do you just kind of save that for the stage?
I'm laying here with a practice pad on my bed and sticks right now.
Yeah, is that right? Man, well, I'll tell you what, Carl, it's been an honor and a pleasure to talk to you. October 28th, coming up the Token, of course, the Emerson, Lincoln, Palmer lives on. You got the box sets, the Legacy Live CD, DVD, all on BMG and stuff. And looking to reach out to a new generation and show them what it's all about. And we can't wait for the show, man. It's going to be amazing.
Thanks for the interview, and great speaking to you, and I hope you enjoy the show. Yeah, that'd be great.
Carl, we'll see you there. Thanks so much.
No, thank you. A pleasure. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Take care.
Bye-bye. There he is, legendary drummer Carl Palmer today on Talking Rock with Meltdown. Coming up next, we'll talk with Al Beck as he's got your Talking Rock news. News about Static X, news about Anthony Kiedis for the Red Hot Chili Peppers, Ozzy, and more. That's next. Well, as promised, Al Beck here with your rock news for today. And I guess we'll start with the news over the weekend, a little sports-related news with Anthony Kiedis. He's apparently he thinks he's like the new, Jack Nicholson?
Yeah.
Courtside there.
Yeah, I guess sports-related technically applies, but over the weekend, Anthony Kiedis was ejected from the Lakers game. There was an altercation between a couple of players. Chris Paul from the Houston Rockets was ejected from the game. But Kiedis got in his face, and he had some words for him, even it looks like flipped him off, and then Kiedis himself was escorted off the floor.
You know, this is one of those things where, we live in the real world. We're like real people, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And we can't do this because we'd be arrested or whatever.
Or afford courtside seats.
Yeah, right, exactly. Or it'd be one of those things where, you know, nobody would care, right?
Right,
but Anthony Kiedis has all the money and stuff. He knows this is going to get in the news, and there you go.
What's with that mustache, though, of his? He's still rocking this mustache. Looks like Sergeant Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band.
Yeah, I think he may have had a scene or two in Super Troopers or something. But anyways, so Anthony Kiedis, that was over the weekend. So what else you got?
Well, Ozzy Osbourne had to cancel a few dates for some health issues. Well, we find out that that he had actually had some staph infection on his hand. Not one, but three.
Hmm.
Staph infections on his hand. The crazy part, Meltdown, this kind of scares you and I because we go out and we do events and stuff and, you know, out in public.
Yeah.
They think it may have come from meet and greets and shaking about 200 hands a day, and that's a little crazy.
Yeah. You know what they said? They said it was like some sort of hangnail or something and he banged it on a door handle or something, but that's very true. And I can't tell you the amount of meet and greets I've been to where there are bottles of like Purell around, you know, because that's what happens. It's like, you know, these guys just meet and greet. Hey, listen, I'm not like a germaphobe like some of these guys, but man, I've seen some guys that will not shake your hand. They do the fist pump thing, you know, the whole thing like that.
So. I don't blame them either, though, because it's so easy to pass something back and forth. I've gotten sick from bands during meet and greets, little bastards. Saving Abel got me sick one time.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Oh, man. Well, they got me sick, too. That was too much alcohol. So, but and Ozzy's going to be playing on New Year's Eve in Los Angeles at the Staples Center with Rob Zombie and Marilyn Manson, Jonathan Davis. That's going to be pretty cool. So he'd have to cancel some dates, unfortunately, for the guys from Stone Sour who spent half the summer touring with him. But he'll be back at it coming up here as Sharon, I should say, will push him back up on stage.
That's right. Well, moving on, how about some new material from Disturbed, the new album available? And they just announced a bunch of tour dates, which is really exciting to see Disturbed come through. But David Draymond is saying that maybe not going to be seeing as much of them as you used to in the past.
Yeah, not touring as much, yeah. Well, we'll see what happens. I mean, you know, look, those guys have been around now for, you know, closing on 20 years or something like that. And we'll see what happens as far as that, as you know, goes on moving forward in 2019 and how many dates they play and whatnot. Because it is a grind. They've all got kids and stuff. Dan Donegan told me a couple months back about the title for the record, Evolution.
Overall, building off the name Evolution, we wanted to kind of not only, you know, being a band for over two decades now, just how much we've evolved as songwriters, as a band, you know, sonically, musically, as our friendship, as this album, as you see once it comes out and everybody hears all the tracks, how much it's taken a bunch of turns. You know, we're always going to push each other to go down other avenues and just try to be, you know, we're trying to evolve as musicians, and when we step in a room together, it's always trying to bring something new that's going to help inspire each other. So that's the challenge you face every time. I mean, to write 100-something songs together, I'm not worried about what the management or the record label or the fans think as much as I'm worried about walking into the room thinking about what the other guys in the band think about an idea I present to them and to get the ball rolling. So, you know, it's always that challenge, but we bring stuff in and we have respect for each other and open minds, and we come in and we take chances on that. I mean, it's just music. You throw out ideas and hope that it inspires somebody to write to it. And you'll see once you get a taste of the whole album on how much we've evolved in that way. We've thrown some ideas around here that are going to completely surprise people on some of the turns we've taken, but overall, I think you know, we feel like we wrote some great songs here.
There's Dan Donegan talking about the title for Evolution, Disturbed's latest record, which came out on the 19th of October. And here he does talk about touring in 2019.
we weren't really planning on doing much this year as far as touring wise until the release of the album or until after the new year and start early 2019. But opportunity came up. There was a few smaller markets that we haven't been to in a while, and yes, Windsor being one of them, and then we did Mount Pleasant, Michigan, and we did Kedah, Wisconsin, and we're like, you know, let's hit these markets. We haven't been there in a while, and knowing that most likely we'll be hitting the major markets, we'll probably be hitting you guys in Detroit probably early in 2019.
All right, so speaking of new stuff, you got some Papa Roach news?
Yeah, Papa Roach, you know, they were putting together some new material almost immediately after they released Crooked Teeth.
Yeah, they've been talking about this new stuff that they've had done for a while.
Yeah, as working off my memory, as I recall it, right after Crooked Teeth came out, they had some tour dates that had to get canceled. So they kind of went, well, we're kind of in work mode. Let's just keep writing some material. So they actually had some stuff, like half an album done before they went on the road, and then they finished it all up this year. And you can expect this January some new Papa Roach on the way.
That does seem pretty quick because I think Crooked Teeth, if I'm not mistaken, just came out in the spring of 2017.
Yes.
And anyways, that was a good record, man. It's a really good record for
those guys.
A lot
of good singles. I'm really looking forward to seeing what they got coming up for us in January.
Yeah, I'm not going to lie and say that I'm like the hugest Papa Roach fan,
no.
But this was a great record,
yeah.
Man.
I 100% agree with you on that one, Meltdown. And speaking of new music, we've had this discussion before about should a band continue after a key member has passed away. And we're seeing a couple of things, some post-mortem albums coming out. You know, Dolores O'Riordan from the Cranberries passed away. And that band has said that they've got some stuff that they recorded with her. They're going to release that next year. And then they're calling it quits. That's it for the Cranberries. They just want to get the last of Dolores' material out there. Well, now we're hearing Static X doing the same thing. It's been 4 years now since Wayne Static had passed away, but they're going to put out, it's about 20 years now since with Wisconsin Death Trip, their debut album was released. So to celebrate it, they've got a new album that they're going to be releasing here in the spring of 2019, and it is made up of compositions and vocal recordings that were made with Wayne before he passed away, and they do want to do also a world tour to help celebrate Wisconsin Death Trip.
Who's going to sing?
I don't know. That's the part I can't figure out, and it's unclear in the story because the album is going to feature Wayne Static's vocals.
Yeah,
and are they going to have maybe samples? Are they going to just play with a vocal track with Wayne Static? I'm not sure.
Well, not only do you have to have his vocals, but somebody has to do that hair thing.
Yeah.
You know, it's like right.
Yeah.
But, well, you know, when did Wayne Static die? I'm trying to remember.
4 years ago.
Oh, it was only 4 years ago.
Yeah.
Okay, it seems like longer, but yeah, it's weird because I just talked to the guys from Typo Negative, and one of the questions I asked him. I talked to Kenny, the guitar player, and Johnny, the drummer, and I said, hey, you know, when Peter Steele died, how much stuff did you guys have in the can? How much stuff, you know, they had nothing. There's nothing, which I was kind of surprised about.
Wow.
Because, you know, Vinnie Paul, I guess, this Hell Yeah record was pretty much almost finished, mm-hmm. I think, or close to being finished. So we'll see what happens when that comes up, maybe in 2019 as well. But,
yeah.
Man, it's weird all these rock stars dying and stuff, you know. I mean, they just did the statue unveiling for Chris Cornell, and now they're talking about they might even have some stuff laying around for
right.
him. So
I'm okay with this. It's the hologram thing I think is a little strange.
That is, yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
No doubt about it. Holograms can't throw guitar picks.
Yeah.
Don't ever forget that.
I like that quote. I do.
Get it tattooed on you. All right. That's going to do it for Talking Rock with Meltdown. Thank you guys so much for checking out our inaugural episode. Do appreciate that. And links and whatnot in the description of the show. And you can leave us a voicemail, 248-586-2988 as well. And as always, thanks so much for listening.